We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
It's Dan Omataya and Nice Young back with another episode of Dice It Up on the Hurt Hoop Stats Podcast Network. Ice went out and got us an awesome guest to break down where we are in our semifinals of the WNBA playoffs. So Ice, how about you introduce him?
Dano, first of all, you're so humble because I'm only responsible for one of our guests. Okay, Dano did get the other. I just reached out and did the, you know, quick messaging, but tag team effort always. What's up, fam? Good to see you. Okay, our first guest had the chance of meeting, I met both of you guys at WNBA All-Star, which is so cool. I love that. I love how it connected the media. That might have been the best part of All-Star Weekend, but we will just breeze through that. Okay, so first up is Mark Schindler, writer for WNBA.com. If you do not follow Mark already on Twitter, please do. All thing women's sports, WNBA. Mark, thanks for joining us. So good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Also, I just realized Dice It Up is combining your two names. Hey. I had never understood it, and I just got it now. So amazing. It only took me like 3 months of listening, but here we are.
We didn't do a good job of like we were supposed to like tell people that like on multiple shows, but I guess we skipped over.
Yeah, I just like said it right now. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. But yeah.
thank you for noticing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Dano. Okay, well, we tried, you know. We would think people would be more clever, I guess, and like fill it in. It's fine. Damn. Mark got it. That's all that matters. Next up, you have become one of my favorite people to talk hoops with. Just conversations, your thoughts and analysis on Chicago this season has been amazing. So Stephen Garner, thank you for joining us. You are a writer for Nuts and Bolts Sports. Like I said, has become one of my favorites to talk hoops with about the W this season. So thanks for being here.
And I appreciate y'all for the opportunity. Peace and blessings to everybody. And yeah, you've been one of my favorites to talk hoop with, as well as Mark. And I've always appreciated the conversation between you and Dano. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity. Thank you guys, for sure.
Excellent. Dano, I love the U.S. Open hat, my guy. I'm jealous.
Yes. shout out to Mark's girlfriend, Karina. Am I allowed to say that, Mark? Is that okay?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you already did. So yeah.
I mean, I can always cut it. You know what I mean?
No, you're good.
All right, cool. You know, I'm super into tennis now that I live in New York City and the U.S. Open is here. And who doesn't love Serena? Sad she lost. But it was like a total clash of worlds with a legend playing on one day. And then me knowing the Chicago Sky were going to dominate and in game three. But them playing at like the exact same time was like killing my brain. And the fact that I had to go to dinner with my in-laws was terrible. So I had to actually rewatch that game. Thankfully, game four was on its own by itself. So very happy about that.
Okay. We love that. Okay. First, we're going to hash out this Connecticut Sky matchup for obvious reasons. But first, I just want one big thought for that series right now from Mark and Steven. Your one big thought.
Man, I don't know if I can wrap it into one. Bad? Like, not the series.
Yeah, like, good or bad. Big
okay,
thought.
Like, one I've thought. Loved the series, but as far as this goes for the Sun, like, bad. Very, very bad. Yeah, the pressure has, like, I don't know. Like, yeah, we'll get into it more, but the just pressure overall on the Sun is, like, it was palpable in Game 3.
Okay. Steven, what you got?
For me, I'm just continuing to be amazed by the variance of ways that the Sky are able to go about getting wins this season, whether it's against like top end teams where you got to score high, or whether it's against a team like the Sun where things get ugly, things get messy, and they just continue to find ways to win, whether it's on their terms or someone else's. And that just says a lot about what you're able to do, especially on this specific stage in the playoffs.
It does say a lot. And I resonate with that. And then I resonate with Mark's kind of sentiment of pressure, because what WNBA coach, what coach in any professional aspect, like, I can't believe ESPN even showed this, but said,
hey man, it's content. Like,
yes.
You know what? I asked one of my producers and he was like, no, that's TV gold. You don't get that stuff on mic ever. And so you got to air. And I'm like, okay.
I for those who aren't listening, we're going to include the clip right here.
Any suggestion on pro players making a layup? Like, honestly, like, I'm going to get fired because we can't make a layup.
Or not knowing what we're talking about, we're going to include the clip right here. But he said he is going to get fired because professionals cannot make layups. And it's the third quarter. They weren't out of this game completely. And I don't think the game got ever hit double digits, really. I mean, it was between eight. It was at two for a long time. Granted, they missed a lot of shots. And we can get into the specifics on who's missing those shots and whatnot. But, like, that just spells an awful, awful culture and environment for me. I would not want to be in that huddle. Knowing that's who I was playing for, that's the leader of my team. I just don't like it from so many different angles. I see you're around it, so I mean, I don't know how much you are at liberty to talk about, you know, if that's kind of his style, his mentality. But to me, it's a lot of blame on other people.
What I'm going to say is, as a professional basketball player who has played, you know, ACC, SEC basketball, where coaches' jobs are their livelihoods and they're providing for their families, that the pressures and stakes are high, obviously. And I think, you know, for Kurt Miller personally, it has been the storyline all season that in the last 2 to 3 years, this team has been the best team statistically in the league. Like, in terms of wins, they had the most wins in the playoffs in terms of a franchise in the W, but have not a championship to show for it. And so I think that level of frustration and negativity that we saw is because of that storyline behind it. And knowing that Kurt is in his seventh year, you know, also the GM, has done a good job, right? Like, this Connecticut team that we're seeing on the floor right now is a team that he put together beautifully. Besides the loss of a Jasmine Thomas at the point guard position, this team would have been the best team to acquire everything that they did in the offseason besides Chicago. And so I just think that comment like that just spews all the things that are behind it that are going through his mind that had been in the storylines, that had been these conversations with the team about, hey, this team is never going to look the same again. We've got to capitalize. And I'm frustrated because we're not capitalizing because we're missing layups. That's what I got from it.
We know whose side you're on.
Oh my god!
I'm just kidding.
It's interesting because there's a lot of stuff I think you can take from it. And in some ways, like, for listeners who are, you know, obviously following the NBA as well, like, the Sun resembles so much what happened with the Phoenix Suns this last year for me. Like, especially, like, I mean, taking some time out, and obviously I'm not in Uncasville as often as Ice is, but, like, being around that team for a week, and, you know, getting to really get to know some people there when I was, you know, writing that story on AT, and this is not trying to shade thing a certain things a certain way, but I was surprised, I think, with some of the answers and just the general openness from this team in general that this is going to be their last year together. And that's been the entire year. It's been, we know this is our last year together. And I think it's one thing, like, of course, you're going to know that in the back of your mind, but it's been a constantly on their backs this entire year. And it felt like that, especially watching game one, like these missed layups, like, yes, part of it is players just not playing well, but it legitimately just feels like pressure and tension, like, so much watching everything. And like, it could have gone one or two ways. Like, I think that first game was like the perfect showing, like, yes, this is going to be an ugly series. They have to come out and win. But then you saw, especially game two, and then in this game three, like, when the pressure goes the other way, like, it is backbreaking. You started to see a ton of stuff, not to be like a body language expert, but body language was awful in game three. The transition defense was like, I mean, there are like two or three players who just aren't even getting back. And that was throughout the entire game. Like, the fact that it was that close still was like mind-boggling to me. It just feels like very much like this team is kind of on the brink of falling apart because of where it's at, which is like kind of like heartbreaking to say, but I just think that's where it's at. And I can end up being completely wrong going into game four, but that's just how it feels in the moment. Like, there are players frustrated about how the offense is or isn't being played. There are, you know, I mean, very clearly, like, there are players who are totally not on the same page offensively and defensively. Like, if there's a missed rotation, somebody's getting chewed out for it. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but like, again, this is like, it's like, this is very close to breaking apart. And I think I'm very interested to see what happens the remainder of the series, because it could go five for sure. I mean, this is still a talented team, but, and not that, that's without even getting into Chicago. We have a ton of stuff to talk about with Chicago, but like, unfortunately, that has been the story, especially with what game three looked like.
Yeah.
Mark, you brought up a great point that I've noticed in terms of like the overall energy and like the things that are, that go without being asked about, they get brought up in answers. So I've been spending time in the press room after every game, and their press conference sessions have a different type of energy to them. I like to pay attention to like the interpersonal things that are said, and of course the mannerisms and body language. And it seems like the choice of words, it continuously gives off the vibe that like this thing is coming to an end, like the end of the road is near. And that goes from the head coach, of course, with Kurt Miller, down to whatever players are selected to speak to the media after games. And you know, with three games at this point, and of course they had a good job and they had a great showing in the first game, and the energy was a little bit more positive, but they were still kind of like hinting at the end of the road being here. And of course, over the last two games, things have been a lot more, like you guys said, palpable in terms of conversations and choice of words and mannerisms and body language post game, especially, and even more so during the games. You know, when the Sky are kind of putting them, it seems like, out of their misery in a sense. Unfortunately, it's a harsh way of wording it, but it's kind of like what it seems like. So yeah, I agree with all the points that you guys are making, and it's definitely giving hints to just that. And having like watched so many different like renditions of NBA teams and how they run their course, some teams take a lot longer to run it, some teams have a lot shorter of a window. This gives off all those same vibes in terms of body language and just how things just generally feel watching this team all season.
I think now, because it's playoffs and it's also Chicago. Like, I feel like Chicago has Connecticut's calling card, right? Like, if they were playing Seattle or Vegas, I don't think we'd see this. I truly don't. I don't think the level of frustration would be as high, not because these teams aren't as good, but because Chicago just always finds a way to figure out Connecticut. Like, it has been like that since Kurt Miller has been there, since James Wade has been there, right? And so I kind of think that hints to it as well, to know that they couldn't beat them in the regular season. I had told Dano, I said, it's going to take a near perfect game for Connecticut and a very C-minus lower F game for Chicago, for Connecticut to win. Like, they're not going to beat them if they play a B game. They're not going to beat them if they play their A game. I don't believe so. And so I feel like that's what we saw in the first game. But I also feel like the main reason that we see this frustration is because this team just doesn't have a clear identified leader. That's all. I'm a huge fan of Jasmine Thomas personally and, you know, professionally on the court. But that's what she was to this team. Like, she was the calm in the storm, like the, hey, we're good, we can pull it together on the court. And this is no knock to any of the point guards that are now playing that position. Like, I think Natisha Heidemann has stepped up incredibly in her third year. I think Odyssey Sims does Odyssey Sims, but she came to the team so late. Obviously, Bria Hartley was heartbreaking. But they just do not have a leader on the floor. And I think when you look to the team, you think it's going to be the reigning MVP and JJ, and JJ just has not been able to do that consistently for whatever reason we think that is. And I know Dana wanted to get in that too. Like, what do you guys think about, you know, JJ right now, Jonquil Jones and her use for this team? Notice, you know, at the end of that last game, she was not in the game. She did not play the last 4 or 5 minutes. And again, we talked about the margin. Like, it was, they, I think Chicago's biggest range margin was 7 points. So the game was close the entire game, but we don't see the reigning MVP in the game for the last 3 or 4 minutes to try and close out the game. Why?
Honestly, and I think some people disagree with me yesterday. I thought it was the right call from Kurt. Like, she was not playing a good game yesterday, if we're being frank. Like, that was really rough. Obviously, game one was extremely rough too. I think, especially, well, defensively, I thought she was really good in game one. And she's had moments defensively where she's been really good. But especially as Chicago's really brought their screens up higher and been able to open up some of the cutting lanes, especially on 45 cuts, she's just been getting caught flat-footed a lot. And again, I think part of that too, like, there's just been, especially in game three, there was some like Nakia Stungen put out a possession that I had noted that was like, I have no idea what her and Courtney Williams are doing on the weak side. And it ends up resulting in a basket. And that happened multiple times yesterday. So I understood pulling her. But I think it also speaks at large to, like, okay, at one point, like, yes, you, like, what's so difficult is when you have a team this talented that has that many players that you have to build your team around. I mean, this is why you don't have all, quote unquote, all-star teams. Because, okay, part of being a star basketball player is, like, A, you have the team built around you. To be that kind of player, you have to want to get shots. Like, very clearly, Jonquil Jones wanted to be a focal point of the offense. Like, it's one thing to tell her, okay, you're just going to be used as a screener and you know, do stuff on the roll occasionally, and, you know, we really need you to space. Okay, great. I'm the reigning MVP. Like, that's a lot easier said than done, and that's what it's been like. Like, this entire year, it's felt like a push-pull of how do they actually get the right amount of Jonquil Jones on the team? It's never hit. And I think, like, game two, frankly, I felt that it was, like, a very clear effort to get Jonquil as many touches as possible. I don't think it was great for the offense, even though it worked for her individually. And, again, that's not to say that she's selfish or anything like that. That's just how it goes sometimes with the way these teams are assembled. And so, yeah, I think we're just – it's not that I think Jonquil is bad. Like, she has not showed up in this round. But it just kind of speaks at large to what the roster construction is like. And again, I think that speaks a lot more to where the team is at in terms of togetherness right now, as you know, as compared to anything else.
Yeah.
I think Ice made a great point with the fact that not having Jazz on the floor, like, of course you have her on the sideline, but in that 94 feet, there's nothing she can do. And having that missing is, I think, by the masses, we might not have put enough of a value on that in terms of giving them expectations this season. And that might be partly due to how well the team, you know, performed throughout the season, even without her. They still showed that they were very much formidable. I mean, they got them to the second round of the playoffs again, you know. So you're looking at it from that perspective, yeah. But at the same time, that is inequivocal and not having her talents on the court. And then I like to point out a point that Kurt Miller made postgame. I think it was after game one. And I wish I could credit the person that asked the question, but essentially the premise of the question was, what's going on with Jonquil and why is there such a high variance in terms of her usage and the amount of, you know, field goal attempts that she has. And Kurt Miller basically went as far as to say it's essentially like a function of having more talents meshed into the fold, comparing it to last season versus this season. It was a predictable answer. It was almost like it was scripted, and it's understandable. But at the same time, again, when your team has a lot of deficiencies offensively, especially in the half court, you have the reigning MVP, one of the most well-rounded talents on the offensive end of the floor, not even just scoring in terms of being able to, you know, operate as a hub of an offense from the post or in isolation or sometimes even down the wing. Like, to not use that talent to the furthest of its extent, or at least not even experiment with attempting to do so with the leader out, it's a head scratcher to me. So yeah, and that again is like a microcosm of all of the things that have been going on in Connecticut this season, unfortunately for them.
I mean, yeah, you brought up, you know, how bad some of these players are on offense. I probably put it a lot worse in that sense, but I got to give a shout out to our guy Calvin Wetzel from, you know, herhoopstats.com. There's three players shooting under 40% from inside the arc. in the entire playoffs, and they're all on the Connecticut Sun with minimum 30 field goal attempts. Alyssa Thomas, Courtney Williams, and DeJuan Bonner. I do think Jonquel, I mean, all her numbers are definitely going to be a little bit deflated from last year with the fact that Alyssa Thomas played a full season, and nothing against Alyssa Thomas and how great she's been. But I mean, they both had really successful regular seasons and put up great numbers overall. But I think for this team to be successful, that Jonquel has to be a focal point. I just think you want your most talented player to be that. If you have, the riches that Chicago has, they have the ability to kind of make any player the focal point on any night. Even down to their bench, that team is so deep. And I feel like a lot of people on Twitter are like, oh, you know, give Dejanay more looks. It's like, well, you know, anyone can come in and be a spark for a little bit, especially against bench players. But I just don't see any way that this Connecticut team can run a table throughout a regular season and postseason with the current way the roster is constructed. So for me, it's built around Jonquel, and that would mean breaking up kind of the AT thing, but I don't know. I'm already talking like the series is over though. So I don't want to be that guy.
Well, the best part is, like, honestly, we could just end up being wrong and somehow, I don't think it's going to happen, but what if Connecticut just wins two games? Like, I doubt it happens, but we've seen it happen before. Crazier things have happened. Again, like, we can't erase how important game one was. But I just severely doubt it. And that's like, I mean, we haven't even mentioned how incredible Candace Parker has been.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like, so much of this, like, what's been so wild is, like, Chicago's up. They have played three very bad games, if we're being completely honest. Like, Chicago has not played well.
Thank you. Like, Maria Copper, Allie Quigley,
Allie Quigley is, like, to be fair to Connecticut, like, they've done a really good job of taking the perimeter players and putting them in as murky of waters as possible, but also, like, they're just missing so many shots.
Yeah.
It's pretty much like Candace Parker's been the offense the last three games.
Yeah. Kalia Copper did not play good in the last game. Mm-hmm. And you could tell she was visibly frustrated with herself about it. As a matter of fact, I saw the end of the game where Candace went to her and hugged her, and they were having that conversation and 100% like could read lips and understand the value of, like, yo, that's one game, bro. Like, you are good. It does not define you. We got the win. We need you to play well the next game. But I completely agree with you, Mark. Like, I feel like Connecticut is not taking advantage of the fact that those players are not playing to their potential, right? I mean, the first couple of games, I was like, Emma Miesemann, come on, like, what's going on here? And in the last game, obviously, she showed up. But, like, only Candace has been, you know, super consistent out of those. Obviously, Sluti, right? We know, Steve and I texted you about this. Dano, I texted you about that. The only reason Connecticut won the first game is because Vandersloot was not playing well. Like, to me, she's the key to them winning games. If they can limit her and frustrate her and muck it up for her, they sincerely have a chance, because everybody else is not their themselves if Sluti is not playing in her regular rhythm and flow and getting people the ball and creating all those different opportunities. But thank God for Candace. Like, I don't understand how somebody so old looks so young. I don't get it. I'm like, I know you're supposed to look experienced and just well beyond your years, and she does, but at the same time, she still looks like she is fresh. Like, I mean, like an Asia Wilson, like, I'm only my fourth to fifth year, like, just completely fresh and, like, ready to go. It's scary.
Candace palmed the ball on the left block yesterday. I was like, oh, it's over. That was like, that was her playoff moment for me. Like, as soon as she palmed the ball, I'm like, oh, it's over. It's going.
I said, about to get dirty.
That was amazing.
About to get dirty. Let me turn this off.
And shout out Kayla Davis. She was like, as soon as she palmed it, I knew it was a bucket.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking the exact same thing. I'm like, yep.
First of all, the level of embarrassment I would have if somebody put me in the post and palmed the ball. I think I'd foul immediately.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what do you think this is? But it's
But that also speaks to the problems with the Sun, because why is Candace getting so many, like, three and four dribble post-ups or isolation, and there's not one double team sent? Like, I know they're sending, on that specific play, they had some split cuts going on between Allie and Sluti. But it's like, forget the split cuts. Like, the person with the ball is the most important. Why are you not, like, giving her more attention in a one-on-one? And that one-on-one defender is not even Alyssa Thomas on that play. I think it was think that might have been JJ on that.
It was JJ. Yes.
Yeah. So, what are we? What are we doing right now?
I think you pick your poison. Come on, it's Chicago. You pick your poison. You know, and I think this is the reason why Emma Meisman is so good, because when they pick their poison and they say, "Hey, we got to get the ball out of Candace's hand. We got to get the ball out of Kalia Copper's hand." All of a sudden, freaking Emma Meisman is a superstar. And not because she does anything differently, but because they decided for her to be the poison that game. But she's so consistent, she's so strong, and she's got the highest IQ in all of the world, I swear, that she always capitalizes and make them look bad when they let her be the poison. But it's like, you got to pick your poison. Like, you can't pick correctly. Like, you picking correctly would just mean that people miss shots. You know what I'm saying? Which is what we're hoping for, which is not a good thing to hope for. But it's helped them stay close in these games.
Exactly.
I'm glad you brought up Emma, because you know about when we did our series preview. Emma is unreal. If people pay attention to the things that she does functioning within the Sky's offense, like not just screening, not just posting up, like the plus one passes that she makes, how many times she slips out of the 2-on scenarios into like the open space, whether it's as a release valve or, you know, different things like that, or cutting from the opposite baseline underneath everything, like she did for the final play to put the nail in the coffin. She does so many different little things. Like you said, her IQ is just so surreal. Yeah, just everything that Emma Meisman brings to this guy, especially on the offensive end of the floor in the half court, you know, behind everything, that the attention that the other guards and players give them offensively, it's just invaluable. And then, of course, what she does on defense speaks for itself with deflections and mucking things up for other teams on the other end.
Yeah, she was awesome on JJ yesterday. Has been the entire series, but yesterday was like, just put her in a straight jacket, honestly, on defense.
Mm-hmm. I think her defense probably goes underrated from most people, including myself. But, I mean, I know where my head and my heart lie, especially after this conversation. I couldn't be more confident to put my money, shout out Spread the Floor, our betting platform from Her Hoop Stats. I will be betting the Chicago Sky money line on game four. I'm very confident that we basically send Connecticut's franchise back a few years. I say we, like I'm part of Chicago. But that's where I'm at. I think this series is done. I have so much confidence in my Chicago Sky. Old takes exposed, you know, come get me if I'm wrong. But I want to hear predictions from everybody else to wrap up this series before we get into our other one.
I'm sorry, can I just highlight my Chicago Sky?
Resident New Yorker.
Did I miss like the whole New York Liberty bus? Like, did it just
hold on.
Turn over, crash and burn.
Until my Houston Comets are back, I can do whatever I want, okay?
Do you own a Houston Comets jersey?
I own a hoodie. I own a hat that says back to back on it. And that's actually a real one. I went to a Houston Comets camp as a child, and I went to many games.
Dope.
And I cried when Teresa Witherspoon hit that shot, because I did not understand how playoff series work. And that's when I learned, because my dad explained to me that there was another game after that, and I didn't have to cry.
Incredible.
Thank you.
Good to know.
I love sports, man. Always love sports.
You're proven. I knew that about you, but I'm glad everybody else does. You're proven. Yeah, okay, welcome. Fine. I just had to highlight the My Chicago. I've talked to Steven about it, Dan. I've talked to you about it. Mark, you're the only one who I haven't talked to, so clearly that's an issue. Just saying.
So this is my problem. Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I like Steven's intro to the pod better than mine, so clearly we have to change things, but I see how it is. I'm taking Sky in four. I think that it's very, like, it's definitely possible that the Connecticut's on duke this out to another game, but I would doubt it. I hope that things play out. I have enjoyed this series as mucky as it's been, but Sky in four.
It was so much nicer than how I put it.
Well, it's partially my job to put it a little bit nicer, but yes.
My original prediction was Sky and four, because I understand like how the Sky operate in terms of warming themselves up to a situation before putting a stamp on them, like they did in the first round with the Liberty. I'm assuming they're going to do the same thing in this series against the Sun. So I figured they would lose one of the first two games. I didn't think it would be the very first game. Ended up being that. And then, of course, we've seen them make the adjustments tactically and schematically, and even with just their energy as a team. And I think they're going to close this one out at 4 tomorrow or today, whenever you guys hear this.
Yeah, my last two comments before we get off of here, but well, you know, transition to the next series, which has been nuts. Yeah, mine was Sky and 4 from the beginning. I just think tactically, it just they're better, and with the veteran leadership that they have, and I think they have an extra chip on their shoulder trying to go back to back as one of the first teams to do that in decades. One, shout out to Rebecca Gardner. Just always have a lot of love for her and always have to shout her out. Love watching her and just love the way that she affects the game when she comes in. Aw, there's Mark's doggy. Hey.
No, that's Moose.
Hey, Moose.
Also, words on Rebecca Gardner tomorrow. So our guest today. Yeah. I'll be
perfect.
Love that. Lauren said, what's up? Second one, I hope we see Dana Evans. I understand that it may be later in the series. People may think that James Wade does not trust her. I'm here to tell you that that is a myth. That is a lie. I believe that he very much trusts her to play. I feel like with the way that Allie Quigley has been struggling, even though Allie Quigley is a proven veteran and she works with that team and unit, she also plays defense. I think that there are minutes that Dana Evans can sneak in there in that position rather than always making the Julie Aleman versus Evans conversation that we've had several times. I think that that is also where Dana Evans can slip. So I'm hoping that we see more of her. I really do. I think she can give some valuable minutes in case it gets a little rough on Wednesday and it's not looking too good. I think that she can come in there and turn some things around. Really do. All right. We are going to Vegas, Seattle, which, bro, honestly, like the amount that I screamed at my TV in my grandmother's house watching game 3, she came out in the back and was like, are you okay? And I'm like, oh, no, it was a big shot. Super just hit this 3. I don't know what's going to happen. And then 2 seconds later, Jackie Young makes his layup. And I'm like, bro, what is going on? So, okay, just end of regulation, whole thing. Like, what were the thoughts? Did Asia Wilson travel? Let's start with that. Did Asia Wilson travel? Did Asia travel?
Somebody's going to call me out on this. I don't think it was a travel. I think it was close. The pivot foot, like, kind of slid. But also, like, it just – if this happened in the third quarter instead of the last few minutes, we're not talking about it. Like
100%.
I know that that's a very annoying take, but like just as far as the actual like margin for error, like I don't think it is nearly as bad as it's getting made out to be. I've just felt like I swear to God, whenever this gets brought up on Twitter, people just don't understand that there's a gather step on a Euro. Like that was just whatever, man. Like I'm fine with it. I on to game 4. that's where I'm at. It's been my timeline the entire day today.
Okay.
That was the best way to put it, though. If it had happened in the third quarter, would not be a big deal. But yes, if we're just looking at it in a vacuum, definitely a travel. I don't care what anyone says. It, you know, if it looks like a cat, meows like a cat. Cat. But I don't think that ever gets called unless it's like super blatant. And her footwork's just too good to call it when it moves that fast. So exactly. It's like, you know, it's still a judgment call, sort of. So it's not like did she step on the line or not. So sorry that she's so good.
I can say to Noelle Quinn, I don't know if you guys were in a post game. Noelle Quinn very clearly thought that was a travel and said as much herself. So she was not happy about that.
I think half the people watching thought it was a travel. Looking at it, you know how you look at something fast and you're like, oh, okay, in game, let me see the replay. Watch the replay, I'm like, whoa. Hold on. I said the same thing. Good, Dano. I said the same thing about her footwork. Like, because it's Asia and she always has impeccable footwork, I think, you know, referees, they're human too. They put that and lock that in their brain. They're like, oh, no, that's Asia making that. Can't be a travel. She wouldn't have traveled like that. And we're here. But 100% live, I was like, yeah. If they could review that, I think they would have found that a travel.
Yeah, I thought it was a travel. So I actually watched that game as a neutral fan to kind of decompress from that Sun-Sky game. I was watching it with my mom, and my mom was the hugest Asia Wilson fan. She loves Dawn Staley, all of that. She was like, oh, she traveled. I was like, yeah, she did. But again, that's the status thing. Like, she's earned the right to have that not be a call in those moments. And she made it count. She scored. And, of course, like all three of you said, her footwork is just it's otherworldly. So she made it look so smooth. There was no like hiccup. There was no, you know, hesitation in the transition from move to move. Yeah, it was a bucket. Let's talk about the other entity that the Storm had in their possession, in their control, that they didn't execute on, rather than trying to get help from the referees in that situation.
I can't say enough positive things about I mean, like, I think 90, it's hard to, I live in data, and I just want to assume that down four with 11 seconds or less, and I just don't think you win that game 95% of the time. And the poise that this Aces team had, and shout out to Becky Hammon for this, but, and you also need things to go your way, a la Tina Charles missed free throws, as you not putting her hands up. But like, then again, like, who knew Jackie was getting the ball there? I am, that might be a series shifting win. And from a team that was down 15, you know, I just incredible poise from the coaching staff and every player on that Aces roster was actually playing minutes. I'm so impressed. It was going to hurt either way for either team to lose this one after either being up by a lot or storming all the way back, pun intended. just tough overall, but Becky Hammon, my God.
Yeah, I literally tweeted, like, her ATOs, beautiful. Like, she got exactly what she wanted to each time, with different options. I think for me, though, I think, you know, as great as Becky Hammon is, I think that those plays, those draw-ups were defendable. Like, Ezzy, you were there. You know, you're going up against Jackie Young, 6 foot. Like, yeah, she's athletic and long, but why not put your hands up? You know, a commentator, I believe, it was Rebecca and Ryan were on the call. Like, she could have taken the foul also as well. You know, take the foul and make her make those. Now, I understand possibly giving up an and one, but I also don't think she put her hands down because of the time. I don't think she thought, like, time had expired, so, like, there's no point in me contesting this. But I didn't agree with that. And then I think Asia also going one-on-one and that draw-up play, I also think there should have been help coming from that as well. So I feel like both of those plays could have been defended. I just think that, yes, we give all credit to Becky because they worked out. But at the same time, I think that defense could have been better there for Seattle. And I just kind of think that that was, like, the point where they fell apart. I really think after that, they just kind of crumbled. And then over time, like, you know, you just called Chelsea Gray to tell her to take you home. And
oh,
we just
go home. But the three to Ra'Connell Williams, like, I don't know. I've been waiting on Kelsey Plum to be the one to finally hit that shot. I feel like she's had so many opportunities in the last, like, month to hit that three to tie it up and or win it, and it hasn't been her.
Yeah.
The fact that she had trust in Ra'Connell Williams to take that shot and make it, which we all know she can. She's a great shooter. Hasn't had the same numbers as she had in previous seasons, but. Oh God, I'm waiting for my Kelsey Plum big moment. It hasn't happened yet, but it's coming.
Yeah, I know. Can we just say, though, like, I got chills, man. Like, hearing that play get drawn up. First of all, we get so much better stuff on W Mic'd Up on the sidelines than we ever get in the NBA. Like, that's
speaking of,
I just have to say. But to hear it, you can plainly hear everything it called out, and then see it run that crisply. Like, that was amazing. That's one of the coolest things I've ever witnessed in sports. And just, like, straight up, like, I think that's one of the five best basketball games I've ever watched live. Mm-hmm. Like, that was crazy. Like you mentioned, though, with Kelsey, like, Kelsey has not shot well, of course, uh-huh. but she's still getting guarded. Like, I mean, the stuff that she's doing, like, again, Nakia Duncan just wrote a really great piece on her screening. She's been huge in what they're doing. And, like you mentioned Chelsea as well. Like, Chelsea, like, we just have to talk about, like, as good as Candace Parker has been, Chelsea Gray has been the best player in the playoffs. Been insane. Like, sure. She's been a top 10 player in the W since the All-Star break and just keeps ratcheting it up somehow, shooting like 70% from the field in the playoffs. And, like, on one hand, I totally agree with Ice. Like, their defense was rubbish yesterday. I don't know why I said rubbish. I was watching James Bond, so, like, British accents and stuff. But, like, but it's, like, also at the point too where, like, Chelsea Gray, like, they literally just, I don't even know if they were calling plays in that first half. Like, it's just Chelsea Gray coming down, calling screens, calling anything up that she wants. She's like, all right, let's put them in a torture chamber. And it was like, I threaded it earlier today, like, literally she just came down, like, she was like, all right, we're just gonna keep running stuff that I think is gonna work. I'm gonna pinpoint every weakness in your defense and we're gonna destroy you. And that was a demoralizing first half. Like, it just literally got to the point where I was like, I don't know what Seattle is supposed to do. Like, I mean, there are plays where Gabby Williams is completely draped over Chelsea Gray as legally as possible. And it just doesn't matter. because she's just shooting like that right now. And I think like it, I mean, when Chelsea Gray is not, even then, like if you're sending a trap, like, okay, Kia Stokes is a good enough roller where if she gets a half step on Tina Charles, she's going to at least get the ball around the basket. Like it's not perfect, but you get what I'm saying. But like, it's just, I mean, granted, again, like that defense has to be better. The amount that they're switching things instead of trying to fight over, I've been a little bit confused, but I don't know why they've gone to that as much. Like part of that is like, the way that it's not just like running double drags or running stagger screens. Like, okay, they're going to set angled screens or they're going to have Kelsey Plum waiting on a back screen. And it's like, okay, well, if we don't switch this, then like a 42% 3-point shooter who's having one of the best 3-point shooting seasons in league history is flaring out to the weak side. Like, it's the kind of stuff where it's like you have to think, and you can see that playing out for Seattle. This Vegas team is so good to see them like have this series. And like you mentioned too, like, I mean, the emotions I had going from Asia hitting that shot to Sue Bird off a flare screen on the left side of the court to go up, I was like it was just insane. And I thought the game was over. And then now we're here talking about them winning in overtime. Like, yeah, that was just, what a game, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. The level of mental and emotional stamina on display from Las Vegas was unbelievable. Just unbelievable yesterday. I was texting Ice during the game. I was like, I felt like the one thing that Seattle had as an edge over the Aces just on paper going into the series was continuity and then just the experience factor and being able to bank on that and executing in the waning moments because the games were bound to be close. So the fact that Seattle did all that they did, like Dano said, to come back from the 15-point deficit at halftime to take the lead within the last like 11 seconds and then fumble it away for things that are pretty much all on their doing alone, like that, it speaks volumes to just how many different ways the Aces stress you. They stress you with Chelsea. They stress you with Kelsey. They stress you on offense and defense. Asia, Jackie Young, she's stepped up and made how many big shots over the course of this series and especially yesterday. Like, there's just so many different pieces that they hit you with, and then you add the dynamic of them out executing you in the fourth quarter, and then in overtime on top of that on your home floor. I mean, what more can you say? I feel like that's one of those series where, or that's one of those games where, of course, things don't carry on from game to game. But when you lose in that fashion in front of your home team, and then you add to the fold that Sue Bird is potentially her last game, like that's a whole other fire that you have to kind of try to put out and just like remain present and try to, you know, get another win and force the game extended to going back to Vegas. It's just so many different things and so much pressure that they just put on the Seattle Storm. I don't know if they'll be able to overcome it. However, if there is a team that will be able to overcome that in the series, it's going to be the Seattle Storm. There's nothing they haven't seen. They have the one of the best point guards to ever touch a basketball. And then they have Breonna Stewart, who's arguably the MVP this season. Like, what more can you ask for in terms of being able to step up to that?
Well, I know exactly what you can ask for. And that's Jewel Lloyd. Like, that's not to be unkind to her, but like, I think especially in the last few games, Jackie Young has been really good on her. Like, she's done awesome stuff fighting through screens, just being extremely active off the ball and making it really hard for Jewel to get any kind of real stuff going off screens. But Jewel still had like probably 8 or 9 shots where she was pretty clean yesterday.
Yeah.
And she missed more than she, I mean, that's been her entire season. I thought, you know, maybe the last 2 weeks of the season, it looks like she was turning that around, even in that game in Washington too, but it just hasn't been there for her, especially in this series. And honestly, that's the difference here. Like, her defense has been really good. She's done a really good job playmaking. It's just the shots. Like, if she's not going to be Jewel Lloyd making those tough buckets that are pull-ups, that are mostly open, like open enough for Jewel Lloyd, then I just don't know if it's enough for Seattle offensively.
Well, that's a lot of why they won game one right there, is because she showed up, and she showed up in the fashion that she did. Great point.
100%. And I tell you what, if game three did not go to overtime and Sue Bird makes that and they don't make that layup, right, we'd have been talking about Jewel Lloyd. We'd have been talking about Jewel Lloyd in the third quarter, fourth quarter, knocking down shots and taking over, right? Mm-hmm. And so I absolutely agree with you that she is the X factor. It's so interesting because this is like a hot take, but I think for people who are going to understand why I'm saying this, like, that team can be run through her. I understand why it's run through Stewie, right? Like, obviously, duh. but it can be run through her because you have to be intentional in getting her shots, mm-hmm. right? Stewie is going to get shots because she's a workhorse. She's always in the right place, right time. She's a mismatch nightmare for anybody who's in front of her. But Jewel, you have to work to get shots. Like, there has to be intention to make sure that she keeps the ball in her hand and she's getting those looks and getting clean looks. She does a very good job of working hard for her looks, right? Her step back three is like unguardable at moments, and also mid-range stuff, but they have to be intentional about getting her looks. But I will say for Seattle, I think watching that game back, all you go back and look is like, yo, we beat ourselves. Like, they didn't have enough in overtime, literally enough in the tank to win that game, but to fight back the way that they did, and they did it with other people having their moments and picking their spots, but finishing with Joel Lloyd doing what Joel Lloyd can do. Like, you walk away like, yeah, that's all we got to do. You know what I'm saying? We just got to do it consistently. But I don't feel like how Connecticut feels to Chicago, Seattle feels to Vegas. I think they definitely feel like, yo, we're fine. You know what I'm saying? Hey, you lose one in overtime. It shouldn't have gotten that far. We got tired at the end. We got lax at the end. That's okay. We can replenish and we can, you know, like, come back together. But I think you just look and you're like, yo, we beat ourselves. But in the ways that we came back, we're able to fight and get there. It ain't no problem. I definitely see this series going to five games. I don't think that Seattle is just going to lay down. I really don't. I think as powerful as Chelsea Gray has been, which to me, I think always in playoff situations and series, it's the point guards. Like, it comes down to whose point guard is better. I truly believe every single time, every series comes down to whose point guard is better. And that's the reason why the Sue Birds, the Sluties of the world have been in these situations over and over and over again, because that is the key to the recipe. But there is just no point guard that's playing better than Chelsea Gray right now. And I don't think that she's going to slow down. And even if she slows down, I think her production in terms of getting the ball to people who need to get it and dishing it off is just going to be just as high to get her team to win. And that's obviously not talking about like Asia Wilson and what Asia has been doing, right? Like, to have 32 or 31, then come back and have 34, even if you travel at the end, like, bro, she's killing regardless, you know?
To y'all's Chelsea Gray point, the advanced numbers on what she's done in this postseason are just scary. Like, you almost don't believe them. And you would think like her assist numbers are down. They're not down either. But leading the league in points per play, PER, offensive rating. I mean, she's shooting 62% from three on nearly 66 attempts per game. I don't know.
Bro, I wouldn't even pass. I wouldn't even pass. I'd pass like every single time and chuck it.
And you still have Asia Wilson on this team. Like,
exactly.
Who can rebound for me if I miss?
And how many of those Chelsea Gray shots are coming off of catch and shoot? Those are almost all self-created. So the fact that she's doing it at that high of a clip is unfathomable.
Well, yeah, crazy. I mean, I don't know who has like a shot difficulty rating, but like, I mean, obviously some of them are like, I thought it was gonna catch up to them at some point. Like, okay, this is not the Aces style to just, you know, have a possession where someone dribbles out the entire clock, a la James Harden, you know, like, but when you're shooting at that efficient of a rate, I mean, it's hard to argue with. Her true shooting percentage right now is what?
It's got to be like in the 80s, right?
I think it's like close 70. To it. I thought it was like
76.8.
That's nuts.
For a guard.
If I remember correctly, I think I want to say it was 54.1% was league average true shooting during the regular season. So that's insane.
Yeah, she's just in the zone. Wherever she is mentally, nobody can touch.
Yeah.
But I liked what she said in her post-game interview. I swear I love post-game interviews. And she just was like, it's the same shots over and over and over again. It's the same reps over and over and over again. And I'm just making them at a high clip. And like, the best players, that's what they're doing, right? Like the Joel Lloyds of the world, the Asia Wilsons of the world, the Stewies of the world, they're not shooting anything different they've ever shot before. They are just excellent at making their same shots over and over and over at a high clip, no matter what defense you throw at them. And so, yeah, this is 100% Chelsea Gray stand account.
I mean, we've seen this before, though, right? Like with Kalia Copper last year. Like, so
it's
many
back.
When they get that, any player or like, you know, a pitcher who's on or just anyone who's in that mode, I think she's hit that point of where, okay, it's just like, a small sample size or you can't keep this up. Chelsea Gray is going to be unstoppable the rest of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for me, game four is such a toss up because I know that like some people, like my gut says Seattle, but at the same time, for all the reasons we just talked about in the Aces, I see, you know, I could easily see Vegas taking game four, but I don't see them losing two in a row here.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Chelsea Gray to me is the scariest player in the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you think, Dano?
Hmm?
What's your prediction?
I think the Aces will win game four, sadly.
Ooh.
Okay.
Spicy.
Are you going to put your money where your mouth is?
Well, here's the thing. I'm so confident in Chicago, and every time Chicago wins, so does Las Vegas. So, you know.
All right.
I don't want to be superstitious, but
I'll go against the grain. I think it's going to go five. I'm with Ice. I still think it goes five. I think Jewel Lloyd has a really good game four because it's just bound to happen. So, yeah, I'm there. Also, has anybody ever thought about putting Chelsea Gray, Nekogumike, and Candace Park on the same team before? I feel like that might not be a bad idea. So, where are you at with this series, Steven?
Man, honestly, coming into the series, I just feel like the Aces and the Sky have been intertwined all season long. So, of course, that's naturally what's going to be my final prediction. I did think the Aces were going to struggle to get past the Storm for all the things that I mentioned earlier in the series talk that we had. With that being said, the fact that the Storm lost this last game, it leaves me a little uneasy. I'm not going to lie. The fashion, like the way that it went about. But I'm still going to go ahead and say that the Aces are going to win it in five. They're not going to win it tomorrow. They're going to end up winning it in five. But it's going to be very close, nail-biting style basketball as it's been. I'm very much like Ice in terms of looking at point guards. I'm a point guard enthusiast with everything. Chelsea Gray has been the best point guard in the playoffs, and she's been the best player in the playoffs so far. That's going to end up weighing heavily in how this series ends up turning on its head once it's finally said and done. But I do think the Storm bounce back tomorrow, and they finally put that final stamp on things and crunch time to get the win.
Okay, I love it. All right, so to close out, we're going to do this with every team. So, like, just be fair, right? Okay, so Connecticut wins their series, right? Some miraculous, you know, God intercedes. DeWanna Bonner goes off. Courtney Lee doesn't miss a mid-range pull-up. Who is the better matchup for Connecticut? Vegas or Seattle? Dano, go.
It's so hard because I just, like, don't. I know. It's just hard for me to imagine any type of world where the Chicago team loses two games. But better matchup for them? Oof. Easily Seattle.
Okay. Mark?
I think the better matchup for them is tough. I think, I mean, just based on how the two teams are playing right now, probably Seattle. I think that they'll have a good size mismatch on either team, but more so against the Aces, but the Aces can spread them out so much. I'd say Seattle still.
Okay. Steven?
I would definitely say Seattle. The fact that they have so many ineptitudes on offense compared to what the Aces can present, I feel like it's a lot more neutralized in a sense going against Seattle, so I would definitely say Seattle for Connecticut.
Okay, but Sky come out. Who's the better matchup for the Sky? The better matchup, not what you want to see. I want the better matchup. Dano.
It's so hard because if you think about the regular season and how the Aces have performed against Chicago, it's tough. But I do think playoffs are a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I rather go against, like, with the Chicago team, I think you probably see a lot more Rebecca Gardner playing defensively too. I don't know. It's hard for me not to say Seattle because I trust Chicago's bigs defensively. I didn't trust them in the regular season, but the defense lately has just been so good. I want to say Las Vegas, but I don't think I can. I think I got to go Seattle.
Okay. Mark?
I think it's definitely Seattle. I could end up being wrong. Call me on this in the finals. Tag me on whatever video you post. I honestly think the Aces have kind of figured out Chicago. To a degree. Like, not that I don't think it's going to be a close series still if they play, but especially in the Commissioner's Cup game when they played, like, they really have just leaned into, okay, we're going to make your posts make shots. We're not going to come out and guard your DHOs and split cuts like Steven was talking about with Connecticut. Like, they're very set on saying, okay, Candace take 10 threes. You might make enough to make us care, but we're not going to let you guys get some of the interior penetration you can get if we let you guys slip the basket and get some things going that way. And I think that's, like, to me, the only real quote unquote weakness with Chicago is that the shooting can be shaky at times. And I think that's, again, that's played out a ton in this Connecticut series. Maybe they're saving all their shots for the Aces, but I don't know. I think if I'm Chicago, I definitely would rather see Seattle.
And I will say, though, like, in that Commissioner's Cup and some of the other matchups, like, the Aces had just superior shooting nights, like, just ridiculous shooting nights. Like, Asia wasn't even a factor in that Commissioner's Cup game. Not that, like, I don't want to say it wasn't a factor, but I wouldn't say that she had a huge emphasis, but I feel you on the figuring out Chicago thing, though, like, defensively, at least.
Yeah, Steven.
And that's the great elixir of having series, because it's different how you treat one-offs in the regular season. Even a Commissioner's Cup game, it's a one-off. It's just one game, it's one and done. When you get to a series and you get the preparation and you get to use all the information that you gather from those games that came prior to that series, I feel like that's where it comes back to leadership and head coach and point guard play. Those three things in tandem, however you want to rank them, you rank them. But everything's filtered between those three things. And that being said, I'm going to say the Aces, because I spent the entire season hearing Coach James Wade hint at everybody treating the Las Vegas Aces as holier than thou. They're the darlings of the league, all of these things. So, of course, they're not going to publicize it when it's not asked about. But behind closed doors, I can almost put all my money and all my earnings on it that they have this chip on their shoulder specifically for the Las Vegas Aces. So I'm going to say it's the Aces, because they have a lot of things that I'm sure they've been waiting for to use against them tactically, schematically. And it would be like them emptying the clip of sorts in terms of being able to do that against that specific opponent, especially for, honestly, the only team that the Sky really struggled against. They had their ups and downs against the Storm as well, but they weren't as profound as it was against the Aces. So for the revenge factor and things of that nature, I'm going to say for the Sky, it's going to be the Aces.
Okay. All right, to wrap it up, our finals preview and MVP choice. I have Chicago repeating against all things Chelsea Gray in my freaking DNA. I do have Chicago repeating. I've had it all season. I do think Candace will get finals MVP. I just think that she's just going to do exactly what she's been doing. And I do agree with you, Steven, that I think Chicago can figure out and stun Vegas. I really do. I think it's tough because they're a great one-on-one team. But I also think when you play as a unit defensively, as tough as Chicago can do that, I think they can mess around and stun them. So that is my pick. Dano doesn't like it, but I know he still loves me, but now we're going to go him. What do you have to say, bestie?
No, I love it so much. I would make so much money if Chicago wins it all this year. And that would be like the biggest blessing. I'll take you on the nicest dinner you've ever had. I'll take all of you on like great dinner. I am so afraid of Chelsea Gray, though. My heart says Chicago, but my brain says the Aces kind of just figured it out. And I think the Aces win in five at home, and it's a big party in Vegas, and Mark has a great time.
Vegas, so I'm hoping. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, no, you have Chelsea being MVP.
Oh, easy. Yeah, like. Okay. Just
want to make sure we got a lot of Asian Wilson lovers, including referees, and
they're gonna get every MVP. They're gonna get they got the All-Star Game MVP, they got the Commissioner's Cup Game MVP, Finals MVP, and then hopefully Asia Wilson.
Yeah. Okay, Mark.
I have to stick my guns. To me, this is just the Aces year and the way that things have worked out. Ironically enough, like going into the playoffs, I thought that I had questions about them still. But with how Chelsea's playing, the way that things have looked in the half court, something that as much talent as they have, has been an issue for them at times this year. I think that they do it this year. Like, I just see it. I don't know. Like, that's like the weakest analysis possible, but that's where I'm at with it. I just think that they have it. If they win in five, we can do a courtside pod in Las Vegas, wherever it's at. So, but yeah.
Steven, last one. I'm sure you're not going to surprise me, though.
I think, like Mark said, having the juice and having that quote-unquote it at this point in the season speaks a lot to, you know, your chances against whoever your opponent might be in the finals should you get to the finals. That being said, I still, as I've had all season, have the Chicago Sky repeating as champions. I've actually had Courtney Vandersloot being my finals MVP. Just kind of looking at how when that team is their absolute best, like they take on different forms as far as when Candace is the best player versus when Kai's the best player versus when Sludy's the best player. And I feel like their best, most well-rounded version of themselves is when Sludy is that best player because she's being aggressive from the point of attack defensively, mucking things up at the point of the screens and getting her hands on deflections and just doing a good job containing the ball to doing things and inversely offensively, picking teams apart, getting to her midi pull-ups, getting to the basket, and just beating teams with the pass and just thinking next level. So I have the Sky winning the championship. And Candace Parker is going to obviously have to play a huge part. Kalia Copper has to play better than she has in this series against the Sun. But I think it's going to be behind the play of Courtney Vandersloot that they get over the hump, especially if they go against the Aces, because Sludy has to outplay Chelsea Gray, who's been the best player in the playoffs so far. So, you know, you put that context to it, that's the main avenue and outlet for them to do that. And I think she'll be up to the task like she was last season and they'll repeat as champions. And I think that would make them the first repeat champion since early 2000s.
Was yeah.
it 01 or 02?
Yeah.
There you go. Boom. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we've got predictions. I will write these down, possibly start a group chat and just remind y'all as what I'm, you know, said happens. And like, you know, I speak the future. No, but definitely in for a treat for the rest of this series and semifinals and then the finals. Mark and Steven, thank you guys so much for joining us on Dice It Up. It was a true pleasure to just hear about your analysis, how you guys cover the league and different teams, and just to really appreciate your support and the relationships that we built through covering the W. It's been really great. And Dana, love you as always, Dan.
Yeah, love you too. Make sure you follow our awesome guest and yeah, follow me and bet the Sky Moneyline game 4. Do it. let's cash some tickets.
We'll see y'all next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.